This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott.
The American economy.
Climate change without.
Hacking.
Different religions in it.
Sustainability.
Social media.
Security. Freedom.
Technology.
Marriage.
Ethics.
Privacy.
Our New Year's series, Rethink 2014, is an opportunity to challenge habits, assumptions, and ways of doing business as usual. Today, primary politics. Characterized by partisan gridlock, grandstanding, and an unwillingness to compromise, the 113th Congress is well on its way to becoming the least productive legislative body in American history. Elected officials increasingly hail from the ideological fringes of their respective parties, leaving little room for moderation, dialogue, or consensus around even routine issues, never mind those considered divisive. Some politicos and theorists argue that the march to the partisan battle lines starts long before a candidate gets sworn in. It begins with the primary, when extreme views draw audiences and media attention away from the moderate middle. Today, we're prodding one of New Hampshire's sacred cows by asking whether it's time to dramatically reform the way that we do primaries. Joining me is Dean Spiliotis, civic scholar in the School of Arts and Sciences at Southern New Hampshire University and author of the website nhpoliticalcapital.com. Dean, thanks so much for being with us.
Hi, Virginia. Glad to be here.
Seth Maskett is with us on the line. He's a political scientist at the University of Denver and a frequent contributor to Pacific Standard Magazine. Hello, Seth.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
So just a warning here, talking about changing primaries is cause for tarring and feathering here in New Hampshire. But I'm going to start with you anyway, Dean. What is behind the thought that politics is broken and the cracks begin in the primary?
Right. And as you mentioned, I am going to remain agnostic in terms of whether or not we should actually reform the process, because I do live and work in New Hampshire. But you know, that being said, I think the initial impetus for having the primary system that we now have, it goes back in part to some reforms in the early 1970s that were designed to kind of take control of the process away from party insiders, make the process more democratic with a small d, more participatory, give people an opportunity to register their preferences and get to meet the candidates. And, you know, the complaint about New Hampshire has been that if you look at the demographics of the country as a whole, New Hampshire is whiter, it's older, it's more affluent, it's more rural, it's more highly educated. It is not, in essence, not a good snapshot of the voting population. And that's really been kind of the genesis of the complaint. And New Hampshire's response is always, you know, in a way, we kind of provide an ideal of sort of the participatory civic process. Candidates can build their organizations here. They can engage in retail politics, and we can basically test their mettle on the behalf of the rest of the country.
Seth, we've heard about some proposed reforms, not even just changing it from a New Hampshire or Iowa primary, but changing the primary system altogether. What are some of the proposals that have been made to shift the outcome of the political primary process?
Well, some have proposed making a single one-day national primary. So instead of this kind of lengthy process where candidates go from state to state, you actually just settle it all in one day. One of the downsides of that is that, you know, to the extent that money and endorsements and insider support determine who gets the nomination now, that would become even more the situation if it's a one-day primary. It's essentially impossible for someone to put together their own campaign. They'd really need to have huge financial and insider support in order to actually prevail on primary day. Others have proposed maybe doing more of a regional style primary. Larry Sabato at University of Virginia has this proposal to do essentially like four regional primaries. You know, that would give each region of the country a chance to have its voices heard, and you could essentially determine the order through lottery or just randomize it every 4 years. Another idea would be simply to do the system we already have, but not necessarily make Iowa and New Hampshire the first ones. There's certainly a lot to recommend them being relatively small states where candidates have a chance to practice retail politics and actually get out and meet people, where you can't necessarily win it with a lot of TV advertising. And we could do other states of similar size or demographic profiles. But it doesn't necessarily have to be New Hampshire and Iowa. I have the liberty of not being in New Hampshire, so I'm allowed to say that.
Well, how would presidential elections play out differently if the primaries began in larger, more ethnically diverse states like Florida or California? Can you imagine?
It would probably look somewhat different from how it does today. I mean, you would see far fewer campaign photo ops at at things like county fairs, or and probably a lot more of candidates actually going into cities. You would see different issues coming to the fore as being important. When New Hampshire is the focus of the nation's attention, we don't hear much about illegal immigration, or to the extent it does, it's people who are concerned about Canadians. Mm-hmm. It would have a very different tenor if that were held in, say, California or Arizona.
Right. Did you want to add something to that,
Dean?
Yeah,
no, this is very interesting. The argument, at least here, has been that if you swap out to these larger, more diverse states, you're going to end up with more TV ads, more radio ads, kind of tarmac campaigns where the candidates just hop from airport to airport, that you would lose that retail politics experience, which was sort of the underpinning of the desire to make the process more decentralized and mm-hmm. participatory.
Okay, well, I'm hearing a couple of different things here making me think about New Hampshire voters. They do take their role very seriously. But related to it, is retail politics really still operating in this global media age? Now we have candidates followed so closely, their messages so carefully manicured for mass media and for social media. Case in point that I'm thinking of is that all the major candidates used to come and spend an hour taking calls on NHPR's statewide call-in program that's called The Exchange with Laura Kanoy. Not so much these last two primaries. Their campaigns say they can't spend that kind of time, and I suspect that they don't want them unscripted for an hour. So without that emphasis on local outreach, can New Hampshire still legitimately claim to deserve this position of primacy in the primaries?
Yeah, let me just say that New Hampshire, certainly, as you mentioned, Virginia, they do take their role seriously. We get upwards of 70% turnout in the primary, and people do feel that this is sort of a civic responsibility being exercised on behalf of the broader country. But this other issue of media and technology, it has had a huge impact. I've seen it in the 20 years I've been up here on retail politics, where it used to be the case candidates could come up here. In some cases, they still can, but they used to come up here and kind of in somewhat seclusion, kind of test their message and build their organization, maybe make a few missteps. Now, that stuff is all immediately accessible, both nationally and internationally. It's not unusual for me to now get an email from overseas in which the person says, I was watching Mitt Romney's speech in Portsmouth the other day over the web. So that sort of ability to kind of build your campaign in somewhat isolation has really been removed by technology. And I think, as you mentioned, it's particularly problematic with the front runner and the bigger campaigns. They're very, very cautious.
Dean Spiliotis there of SNU, talking about how candidates leverage global and social media, often leapfrogging over local media, in fact, to get their message out. We wanted to hear from local voters about what the primary means to them. Producer Zach Nugent randomly polled a few people on Main Street in Concord who were willing to stop on a freezing cold day, and he asked them, how would you feel if New Hampshire no longer held the first in the nation primary?
I think the first-in-the-nation primary is very valuable to New Hampshire. Not only does it keep citizens engaged in the political process, but it focuses on our state, brings a great deal of business for our economy. I think it's really critical.
I feel like we become more insignificant than we already are.
What would you miss?
Probably all the attention and people actually knowing the name of my state.
Ooh, I love the first-in-the-nation primary. It's so great to see everyone participate in it and everyone be active and feel like you actually get to talk to the candidates. One candidate who shall remain nameless, I went to hear him at a town hall. He was an utter jerk to his sound man, and I decided, well, if he can't handle a bad sound man, I don't think I'd like him as president.
That wouldn't bother me at all.
You wouldn't care?
No.
You wouldn't miss a thing?
Not a thing.
I think it would be a real blow to the economy and to the ego of the state. It's a great organizing opportunity. It's a great opportunity to get issues on the table, the national table. Mm-hmm. So I think that the nation would lose out if we didn't have the presidential primary anymore. Less stressed.
Why would you feel less stressed?
Because it's a lot of thinking about the politics and listening to it on TV and on the radio and occupies a lot of your time.
It'd be a loss. Oh, I think it's fun seeing people coming through.
Well, since I'm not really into politics, I probably wouldn't care.
I come to like it.
I think it gives us, the average person, an opportunity to meet the candidates, get to sit down and talk at the different events. And I think it makes us a more educated voter when it comes down. And I think the rest of the nation respects what the good people of New Hampshire do and looking on how we vote and take each of the candidates and weigh the balance on what they're going to do. Even if it is not their favorite, they like what New Hampshire does. So I think it's good all around. So I would like to see New Hampshire keep it for sure.
Thanks to producer Zach Nugent there, along with everybody who was willing to stop in the polar vortex of yesterday afternoon. We're going to continue this conversation with Dean Spiliotis of SNU and also political scientist and writer Seth Maskett. When we come back, we'll discuss the length of the primary season and how maneuvering by the respective party apparatus affects primary politics. This is Rethink 2014 on Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott, and this is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. As part of our series Rethink 2014, we are wondering about whether changing the nature of political primaries could reduce partisanship that is shaping up to make the 113th Congress the least productive in American history. Is it there in the primary season push for distinction that extremism and entrenched positions get seated? Is it in giving airtime to the fringe candidates that our political debate gets skewed? Or is that just necessary for representative democracy? With me to consider these questions are political analyst Dean Spiliotis and Seth Maskett. Well, we talked quite a bit about New Hampshire's place in the primary system, but I'd like to shift away from location and address the length of the primary contest. Here's a clip from the end of GOP primary season 2012. Megyn Kelly of Fox News speaking with political columnist and commentator Charles Krauthammer.
Your take now at this point in the process on whether this extended primary process that was a choice by the GOP is working to the GOP's advantage?
No, I think it's hurting them terribly. And you're right about the fact that it is a Republican choice. And I think it was a really stupid choice. They decided that in 2008, they had gotten a candidate too early, a weak candidate in McCain, and they got slaughtered. So they were going to undo that and have a long, drawn-out process and let the voters decide over time. The flaw in the reasoning, and it was pretty obvious, they'd be running against an incumbent president, unlike in 2008. The Democrats would not have any early contest. They wouldn't have any negativity.
Okay, columnist Charles Krauthammer there talking about the 2012 primary contest. If we look back to 2008, a very long primary season also, I don't think it did any favors for then-Senator Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton. They traded barbs on this long trail, giving plenty of ammo to Republicans to later fight with. Seth, question to you, would the parties benefit from shortening the overall length of the primary season?
Well, actually, I don't know if I'd agree with what you just said. That I mean, in many ways, the Republicans were looking at the Democrats in 2008. There was a lot of concern that that very drawn-out contest between Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton was going to be costly to their ticket. And in the end, they did just fine. They won very strongly in November. The party seemed very internally divided going into the convention, but ultimately came out very unified. In many ways, not only did the divisiveness and the length of that primary season not really hurt the party, it may have actually helped. It actually made some of those later contests much more competitive. So if you were in a state that normally doesn't see a lot of competition, normally doesn't see a lot of activity during the primary season, they paid attention to you, and they actually drew people out to vote. They got people involved in the process. That probably helped to generate interest, generate volunteerism for the fall campaign.
CNN recently revealed that some in the GOP are planning to shorten the primary season and also to rein in some of these fringier candidates by penalizing contenders who participate in what they call non-sanctioned debates. So what's the thinking there, Dean? What effect might that have on election outcomes?
They're going to try. I mean, they say this every 4 years that they're going to rein in the process. I agree on principle that there are too many debates. I think the threshold for participation in the debates is too low. You end up with 15 people on the stage, each speaking for, you know, a minute. minute or a minute and 30 seconds. So I think there should be fewer debates, not as controlled by the media outlets, because basically each media outlet wants its own debate to showcase its commentators and its advertisers, et cetera. So I think there are certainly reforms. Whether or not the GOP is going to be or the DNC are going to be able to take that control away from the states and from the campaigns and the media, I don't know, but they're certainly going to try.
Primaries are also a platform for candidates like the Ron Pauls, like the Libertarians or small party candidates who don't expect to win, to try and influence the conversation. Would a national-only primary risk losing a platform for dissenters to air their ideas? Dean, you first.
This is a very interesting point. I think every 4 years there are some number of candidates who are in it for reasons other than becoming the nominee of the party. I think that, you know, in reality, they have a good sense that they're not going to be the nominee, but it's an opportunity to build their visibility. It may be a struggle for control of a particular wing of the party. They typically have a loyal following, but fewer financial resources. On the other hand, should the presidential primary really be a place where you kind of fight out these sort of intra-party power struggles? I don't know, but certainly a lot of those folks, thinking way back, you know, Gary Bauer in the Republican Party, Al Sharpton in the Democratic Party, you know, neither of those gentlemen had a chance of being the nominee, but at different moments they each had an impact on the discourse in their parties.
Sounds as if the pair of you would keep the primary system, at least on the surface, as it is. So what would be some other possible solutions to the partisan gridlock that we're talking about if we're looking at the roots of things?
You know, obviously I'm here in New Hampshire, and so I get a front row seat, so I'm not looking to lose that seat anytime soon. But, I do think there is a concern that what was initially intended as an experiment to kind of decentralize and democratize the process has now cycled back around to a more nationalized process. It's not so much the parties. I don't think many people would say it's the RNC or the DNC. It's the national advocacy groups. It's the millions and millions of dollars in unregulated money. It's the way technology has nationalized campaigns. I think all of that, there's a real downside to it. And you know, for me, I'm always concerned when I see what I saw in the GOP primary last time around, which was this sort of sequence of front-runner candidates who really had no ostensible campaign infrastructure on the ground. They essentially were media-generated phenomena for a week or two at a time.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's bad for the process. So I understand the sort of tendency to nationalize things now because of money and technology, but I do think they still need to prove themselves on the ground, which is why, for me, obviously, I like seeing them try to do that here in New Hampshire.
Okay, Seth, you, of course, are allowed to say that the New Hampshire primary doesn't work. What do you think?
Well, I would actually say that to the extent that we have a problem with polarization and gridlock, it's really not at the presidential level. The nominees that we've seen, if you think Mitt Romney or John McCain, these were by far not the most extreme candidates that the Republicans could have produced those years. Barack Obama in 2008 didn't sound nearly as far left as, say, John Edwards did.
Hmm.
So we're seeing that much more so at the congressional level. Or at the state legislative level, where it's really the most ideologically extreme candidates that tend to win the nominations. And that can be a serious issue. One of the solutions is actually media coverage, to the extent that we can actually focus on what some of those candidates are saying at these somewhat lower levels of publicity. We can help, shine a light on extremism, and candidates will have a little bit more incentive to moderate.
Well, Dean Spiliotis, I want to thank you for your time today.
Sure, my pleasure, Virginia.
And Seth Maskett, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Dean Spiliotis is civic scholar at the School of Arts and Sciences at Southern New Hampshire University. He's also an author of the website nhpoliticalcapital.com. And Seth Maskett, political scientist at the University of Denver and frequent contributor to Pacific Standard magazine. You can find more ideas on rethinking the primary process, including CNN's article on possible changes the GOP is considering for 2016. That's all at wordofmouthradio.org. Thank you for spending some time with us today on Word of Mouth. We hope you'll tune into all of our month-long series, Rethink 2014, from elections to sex to how we decide which endangered species to save. We're going to be challenging you to challenge your own assumptions, your habits, and ways of doing things. I'm Virginia Prescott. Please do join us again tomorrow for stories told by Word of Mouth from NHPR.